Are you ready for the quantum age?
Humanity's next step in evolution?
Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you to the extraordinary platform of Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age.
Let's explore. Learn more about this upcoming age where we bridge science with spirituality.
Where potentiality meets reality.
Where we take compassion into action.
Our trailblazers and visionaries will ask the whys, the what ifs, while igniting continuous possibility.
Come along with us into an age beyond what we know today, where we can grow together in unity consciousness.
Experience Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age, Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on DreamVision7Radio.com. Welcome to What's in Your Way is the Way with your host, Mary O'Malley, inviting you to open to the radical notion that in your life, whatever you perceive to be in your way is the way. In other words, your challenges, whether they be relationships, compulsions, finances, or illness, come with gifts embedded in them that can bring healing and allow you to experience the joy of being fully alive. Mary is a counselor, awakening mentor, inspirational speaker, and the author of What's in the Way is the Way, The Gift of Our Compulsions, Belonging to Life, and The Magical Gift of Aliveness. What's in Your Way is the Way with Mary O'Malley is part of Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age. Heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Welcome to What's in Your Way is the Way. I am your host, Mary O'Malley. And today we're exploring one powerful poem. This poem is by Rumi, a 13th century Persian poet, and he's one of the best known poets in the world because he speaks directly to the awakening that is happening in human consciousness. And he's a guide for many of us on this path. The Guest House, the poem we're exploring today, is his most well-known poem, and it speaks directly to one of the core foundations of awakening, discovering how to be with whatever life brings us. This is not yet deeply permeated human consciousness. Most religions, therapies, and even for many in the living in the now movement, it's all about getting to the good stuff and getting rid of the so-called bad. If I just pray right, or fix my anxiousness, or meditate more, or live in the now, then everything will finally be okay. But the difficulty with this is that the now includes the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows. So true awakening is all about discovering how to stay open to everything. That's what is called enlightenment. Open to the easy and the difficult, the joyous and the sorrowful that are all a part of life. I'd like to share the poem with you and then offer you some of the ways that it touches me, because this poem touches me deeply. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So Rumi starts this poem by acknowledging something that we rarely ever notice, that we have a stream of thought moving through us all day long. a stream that most of us are caught in, and most of us believe that we are our thoughts. So he says, this being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. But it is really every moment as our minds tumble from one thought to another, telling themselves stories about liking and disliking, wanting and resisting, accepting and rejecting. And he points to the fact that many of our thoughts and feelings are unexpected visitors, like sadness showing up after a wonderful day, or sudden irritation with somebody you love, or a wave of loneliness that you thought you would never, ever have to deal with again. He is alluding to the truth that we have far less control over our thoughts than we imagine. He then begins to explore the heart of his message. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. What could he possibly mean by that? And how could you possibly welcome and entertain a crowd of sorrows? To understand, imagine you could see your mind up on a screen, and you could watch that most of the time it's constantly trying to get rid of the thoughts, the feelings, and the experiences that it deems unlikable, unacceptable, unwantable. At the same time, it's trying to get to what it deems the good stuff. Oh, I just want to be happy. I want to be rich. I want to have the perfect mate. This is the opposite of being a guest house. It is grasping and resisting. That is what our minds do. With all of our experiences and with the feelings and sensations that our minds generate. All this does is keep us caught in a perpetual world of low-grade struggle that oftentimes flares up into difficulties, crises, and emergencies. How do you unhook from this quicksand of struggle? By stepping back and seeing what is going on, and allowing and even welcoming what is there. In other words, becoming a guest house. Or, as Eckhart Tolle, author of The Power of Now, says, whatever the present moment contains, accept it as if you had chosen it. Always work with it, not against it. Make it your friend and ally, not your enemy. This will miraculously transform your life. And I want to say that quote again because it's so powerful, and it really is the essence of what Rumi is getting to in the guest house. Whatever the present moment contains, accept it as if you had chosen it. No, it's not your mind that chooses it. It's the deeper essence of you that chooses it. Always work with it, not against it. Make it your friend and ally, not your enemy. This will miraculously transform your whole life. What Rumi and Eckhart are talking about here is the ability to witness what is flowing through you rather than identifying with it or constantly trying to fix or change it. We're only beginning to realize that all of our struggling with struggle has never really opened us to the deep peace that we long for, the deep peace that we naturally are. And we're beginning to open to the power of seeing, allowing, and even welcoming the thoughts and feelings that make up our compulsion to struggle with life. Why is welcoming so powerful? What we resist, we empower. in my book, The Gift of Our Compulsions, give the quote from the U.S. Surgeons General of the U.S. that says 98% of every pound that is lost in the U.S. is gained back plus some within a year and a half. So I'm using overeating as an example of how we resist what we are experiencing. We try to control our overeater. And not only does it not work, but we actually gain more weight. We actually empower what we are trying to resist. But when we give our experience, our thoughts, our feelings, our sensations, the space to simply be, we loosen our grip on them, allowing them to more quickly move through us. Have you ever been in a heated discussion and suddenly you see that you don't need to defend your position? And as you let go, you just listen to the other person without arguing. And you watch that their argument loses steam. It can't stand in the face of welcoming. The same is true inside of us. When anxiousness is here, rather than getting anxious about anxiousness, you can recognize it is here. Acknowledge it and allow it to be. And the chances of it calming down are far greater than when you just struggle with it, just wishing your anxiousness would go away. A number of years ago, somebody gave me a wonderful bit of writing, and I think it was written by somebody who has spent time with the guest house. And I've tried to find out who wrote this. So if anybody knows who wrote this, contact me. You know, my email is on my website, maryomalley.com, because I want to give credit to this person who wrote this, because it's just a very, very powerful writing. And here is what they say. The question is, what do we do with our feelings? Is it possible to accept them without causing damage? It's possible. Actually, it's more than possible. It's smart. Just like all the other visitors that stop by our home to say hello, our feelings are usually temporary callers. Most of us have no problem accepting visitors as they are. Manners and affection have taught us to pay attention to them during their stay. We welcome them in, take their coat, show them to a chair. What we don't do, of course, is hand over our keys to them and tell them they can have the run of the place. We listen to them, feed them snacks, extend them hospitality. We spend our moments with them and then send them on their way. So this is precisely the way to deal with any uncomfortable visits that stop by our mind for a brief while. Irritation, fear, impatience, loneliness, despair. You know their names. They've all come to raise hell. And if we are smart, we will bring them in, sit them down, and listen quietly to their story. We may even comfort them. Sure, I can see why you're feeling that. Because we are generous hosts, we give them the chance to breathe and feel acknowledged. And then we send them on their way because they don't, after all, live in our home. They are only visiting. If, on the other hand, we haven't yet learned that feelings are merely waves of energy, ones that will pass, we may sometimes confuse our feelings for our identity. If we think the feeling is who we are, it is inevitable that we will step into it full force. It is this kind of misidentity which can do harm. If, after all, I have become the feeling that is visiting me, there are all kinds of havoc I may cause without noticing that I've handed over the contents of my mind to a distraught and temporary caller. So, the secret of dealing with feelings is to receive them without judgment, to neither resist them nor give them ownership of my house. Feelings, as all of us know, are very powerful energies, very persuasive and very contagious. What I do when one catches hold of my consciousness is to step out of its noose as soon as I notice it and invite it to sit down with me for a cup of tea. Deep breath, and then I just listen. I let it know. I understand why it is there. I even tell it to take its time, hang around as long as it needs to hang around. But in the process of this acceptance, I am becoming free. I am the host, not the victim, of my visitor. And when I'm safely out of its fiery clutch, I take steps to address its complaint in a neutral way. Does this sound like too much work? Perhaps you think it is. Once upon a time, so did I. We all have. For now, I prefer to remain in charge of the house and see the constantly changing show of feelings as temporary guests. I honor them. I give them the gift of quiet attention. I may even surround them with love, but I never, ever let them near the breakable dishes. Oh, such a great bit of writing. And just so speaks to the essence of the guest house. And that the core of that message, where is it? Oh, here it is. In the process of this acceptance, of this welcoming, like Rumi says, welcome and entertain them all, even if it's a crowd of sorrows that wipes your house full of furniture. I can't remember exactly what he says. In that acceptance, I am becoming free. I am the host. I am not the victim. And we can do this not only with feelings. We can do them with all the thoughts that move through us, the so-called unacceptable thoughts. And we can do it with the sensations. You know, there's just so much that can be done with pain in our bodies as we go towards rather than away, and as we give the pain space to be there. But this is almost impossible to do this at the beginning once you learn the art of welcoming with very painful sensations or overwhelming feelings or very scary thoughts. For we're so easily seduced into identifying with them and thus fighting with them. But you start with little struggles, like not liking the end of a TV show or the room being too hot or frustration at the length of the stoplight. Rather than judging or getting lost in what is moving through you, you can welcome and entertain them all by giving them a cup of tea, but not letting them near the breakable dishes. So this is where meditation comes in, not the kind of meditation that that most people think of as meditation of, visualization or, trying to get to a good state. Those have their places. But the kind of meditation I offer is the one where you strengthen the muscle of your attention. You are willing to ground in what is. And then, of course, your attention is going to drift back into your thoughts. But whatever your focus is, whether it is drinking your morning cup of tea or sitting on the porch and listening to the sounds as life wakes up, or whether it's sitting with your eyes closed and your focus is the rising and the falling of your breath, you will anchor on your focus, and then you'll notice a couple minutes later, oh my God, I'm thinking about what I'm going to wear today. The key is not to judge that. You've only been lost in thought most of your life, and humanity has only been lost in thought for eons. And so it is when you recognize that, again, you're paying attention to the stories in your head, you just, maybe you say stories or thinking, and then you bring your attention back to your focus. And in this kind of meditation, it's really okay that you wander off, because when you bring your attention back, you have strengthened the muscle of your attention more. And it is your attention that can begin to see what I call curiosity, not the kind of curiosity you try to figure things out, but the curiosity of what is right now. It is that curiosity that can wake up and begin to realize, oh my God, anxiousness is here, or oh my God, irritation is here. It is your attention that will allow you more so to see your thoughts rather than to fall into them. And what I just shared, it's just so important. You know, I was a part-time meditator for probably almost 10 years. And then I met Stephen Levine, and he said, if you sit for 1 hour and bring your attention back to your focus one time in that hour, that is time well spent. And that completely changed my experience with meditation, and I've been meditating every day for decades now, because meditation wasn't, there was nothing about doing meditation right. There was about grounding in a focus and then waking up quicker and quicker when I'm back in thought and then bringing my attention back, because there was no judgment for having wandered off. Stephen said, if you come back once in an hour, oh my God, I thought, I can do that. Oh my God, I'm not a failure at meditation. So this is what allows us to begin to see what is going on and welcome and entertain them all. So then Rumi goes on and says one of the most powerful lines for me after he says, treat each guest honorably, for he may be clearing you out for some new delight. How can what we have formerly labeled uncomfortable and unwanted possibly bring delight? In the last half of the guest house, which most people never see, because if you Google it online, only the first half is there. And I think that's because the last half is Rumi at his most confusing, which Rumi can do at times. But in all of that confusion, there is one line that stands out that brings the truth of the poem right to the point. And that line is, learn the alchemy true human beings know. The moment you accept what troubles you've been given, the door opens. Now, he uses that word alchemy, which is transformation. It used to be transforming lead into gold, and oh, how many people died trying to do that because they got lead poisoning, and nobody was ever able to do it because they didn't understand that true alchemy is transforming our struggles, the energy of our struggles, back into the spaciousness of what and who we truly are. So Rumi says this is alchemy. It's alchemy when you can accept the difficulties you've been given. In other words, when you can be the guest house to the difficulties you've been given, the door opens. In other words, right outside of your struggling mind is your natural essence, your true nature. The more you learn how to relate to what's showing up inside of you rather than identifying with it, the grip your mind has on your attention begins to soften, and there becomes gaps in your struggle. And what shows up in these gaps is the beingness that you truly are. And you now have access to its insight, its wisdom, and to the truth that you are not alone. What do I mean by all this? Well, the best way I've ever described it is to imagine the most beautiful ocean you can imagine. That is the ocean of being, the ocean of your true nature. And floating on the ocean is a small, opaque bubble. And I call it the bubble of struggle. And it's made up of all the contents in your mind and the feelings and the sensations it generates. If you could see what moves through you all day long, you would see that most of the time you are struggling with life, mostly little struggles. But we all know times where our minds have meltdowns and hissy fits and we're given news that breaks our heart and terrifies us to our core. Now, this bubble of struggle is opaque. You can't see outside of the bubble. So we rarely notice the ocean of being, which we truly are. When you discover how to stop identifying and struggling with it, whatever you're experiencing, struggle calms down. And then, as Rumi says, the door opens. The door, which has always been there in the bubble of struggle, but we don't notice it. And one day, as we learn how to become the guest house, welcoming, allowing, rather than falling into or trying to get away from whatever we are experiencing, the door opens and the ocean of being, which has always been here, reveals itself, and you recognize and rest again in your true nature. In one of my Hawaii retreats, the theme was, all is welcome here. And I put signs with this statement all over the retreat center. One of the women shared that when she read that sign, what she read, instead of all is welcome here, she read all is well come here. The truth is, all is well. For we are not our struggling minds. We are the ocean of being. This is what Rumi is alluding to in his poem, The Great Wagon, when he says, and this is one of the best known lines from Rumi, just like the guest house is one of his best known poems. This is one of the best known lines, and for me, the Great Wagon is another one of those slightly confusing Rumi poems, but this line stands out, and this is why so many people share it. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I will meet you there. When he says rightdoing and wrongdoing, he is talking about our dualistic minds. This thing that talks in our head is dualistic. it likes, it dislikes, it thinks this is good, this is bad, that is right, and that is wrong. And he is saying right outside of that is a field. And it's a field of light, it's a field of ease, it's a field of wisdom, and it's a field of peace, and it is your true nature. That is what is outside of the bubble of struggle, and how we move beyond, how we open that door out of the bubble of struggle is not by trying to make ourselves better or different than what we are. It is about learning how, as Eckhart said, whatever shows up in your life, act as if you've chosen it. Work with it rather than against it. But it is important to say that all is not well is the truth of our minds. In fact, our minds really, truly believe this a good deal of the time, and so off to the races we go. This is what our minds spend time with a lot, all day long, trying to find the wellness that we long for. But the wonderful thing is all of this struggling with life never makes the field of ease and peace go away. It is always, always with us. We just don't notice it. So the best way I've ever described this is imagine you are out in an outdoor symphony on a summer night. The air is warm. There's stars just scattered all across the sky. And the music is moving through you and bringing such great joy. And then, a couple of seats away from you, a man stands up and starts arguing with the person in front of him and flailing his arms and being very upset. What do? We no longer notice the symphony, even though it's still playing. Our focus is on the struggle. And what we try to do is get this man to stop, and you know, we call the ushers and so on and so forth. And this is where the metaphor kind of breaks down a little bit. But the truth is, if you go over and listen to the man to ask him why he is upset, the very great chance that he will calm down. Now, that's where it breaks down, because a lot of people wouldn't calm down. But this is the truth in the struggles inside of us. That when we learn how to listen to them, welcome them, even surround them in love, like he says in the inviting them in for tea that I read to you earlier, those parts of us begin to calm down and move through us. In the last part of the poem, he says, the dark thought, the shame, and the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Now, it has taken me a long time to be awake enough that I can be aware at the moment something shows up inside of me. And there are still thoughts and feelings that I only notice after they've gathered up a steam of resistance and struggle. And I usually don't meet them at the door laughing. And sometimes I do, but it's not laughing at that particular state. It's just laughing from the pure joy of welcoming them. But I can invite them in a lot more and more with curiosity and kindness, bringing them home to our hearts. Yeah, it does take a while to be able to do that with malice and shame. And, you know, shame was one of the biggest struggles that I had in my life, because I bought into it hook, line, and sinker. But slowly and surely, I could even say hello to shame when it arose. So finally, he gets to just such the core of this poem. He says, be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. How can we possibly see that things like shame and malice and dark thoughts are sent as a guide from the beyond? By finally recognizing the truth that life is a highly intelligent process, and it is giving us the exact set of experiences we need to see and see through our compulsion to struggle with life. We think life is happening to us, but it truly is happening for us. Even the most challenging of experiences are not here because you have done something wrong, or whatever is in charge has fallen asleep on the job, or you're being given karmic punishment. Instead, your challenges come from life's longing for you to become free from the bubble of struggle, to find the doorway out of the bubble of struggle and back into the ocean of being. When we see life this way, we see that everything is either an invitation to just be here with life as it is, or an invitation to see where we are shutting down, where we are still addicted to struggling with life. And we finally see the deep pain we create when we struggle with our struggles. Then it makes sense that the way through all of the struggle is to simply be present for whatever is here. I think the best way I've ever described this is the room with 1,000 doors. And so imagine a locked room. And this is the bubble of struggle. Now, I'm kind of mixing my metaphors here, but this is the place that most of us are trapped in our heads. We're not even aware that we think our way through our lives. And we're not even aware that most of our movement is trying to get out of struggle by struggling with struggle. So that 999 of these doors we try countless times, and one of three things happen. The first is the door is locked. The second, the door opens, and there's a brick wall. The third is the door opens, and we walk out of the room, only to walk right into the same room. Now, after you've tried these 999 doors, hundreds and hundreds, maybe even thousands of times, you know, if I just think right, then everything will be okay. If I meditate more or whatever, or if I get rid of this cancer, you know, then I will finally be okay. There is that last door. It's a little tiny door. And it's down there in the corner, so it's dark. And there's a word written on the front of the door. And because it's so dark, you can only see what the first two letters are, because you've not gone anywhere near this door. And the first two letters are H-E. So you think that's the door to hell. And so you're going to try absolutely everything to stay out of hell. And then one day, sitting in the middle of the room in despair, that life seems pointless and meaningless and is just suffering and there's no way out, you notice this little door, because you're sitting down now. You're not trying all the other doors. And you think, oh, well, God, hell's got to be better than this. And you crawl over to the door. And when you get there, you see that the word written on the door is H-E-R-E, here, which is what the guest house is all about being here with the here-ness of here, with whatever life is offering. And of course, the first thing your mind says, well, that's not going to work. You know, I've got to fix things. I've got to change things. I've got to get rid of things. I've got to rise above things. And then you say, well, you know, well, maybe I'll give it a try. And it opens just a little, and you stick a hand through, and the door becomes bigger. And then you stick an arm through, and the door becomes bigger. And then you stick your head through, and the door becomes bigger. But the amazing thing is you never really walk through that door. Because as here-ness expands, the room of struggle dissolves. And yet it's so important to say this, that all of our minds are afraid of this. We long for it. We long for it. And we recognize the truth that our home is this moment. But we're afraid of it because the last time that we were fully here, which is when we were very young, before thoughts began to fill up our head, we got the living bejesus scared out of us. And we got our hearts broken. And we got our minds so very confused, even if we had loving parents, because we were mainly raised by unconscious giants. And so the mind says, well, I want the now, but I want it only on my terms. But opening in the now is opening to the great and wondrous creative flow of life. And so we need to be so gentle with how afraid we are. And we need to know, as Stephen Levine called one of his books, this is a gradual awakening. What we're talking about here is not the quick fix, but as far as I can see, it really is the way out of the trapped bubble of struggle that most people live in most all of the time. And the wondrous thing is, as you begin to become a guest house, as you begin to welcome whatever is there, you begin to see how scared your mind has been, how hard it has been trying your whole life to do your life and to do it right, and how much it secretly believes that it's not enough. And this is where you can learn how truly to be a wonderful host, that you can unfold what you formerly resisted with the healing acceptance of your heart, which allows it to let go and more easily pass through you. You know, I had a kind of childhood I wouldn't have wished on anybody, and just went into really, really deep worlds of darkness where overeating and drugs and alcohol and multiple suicide attempts and mental hospitals, you know, that was my world, you know. And when I was between 27 and 28, a teacher came into my life that taught me this art of seeing what is here. I hadn't yet learned the art of welcoming. I learned that 11 years later when I met Stephen Levine. But just, I began to be able to see that there was nothing inside of me that was bad or wrong or needed to be fixed. So many people had tried to fix me, you know. And as I began to undo, you know, with my ability to relate to see what was going on rather than being lost in it or running away from it, I realized that one of the core experiences of my childhood was dread. And dread is the feeling that something really horrible is going to happen, and it's going to happen because you screwed up. It's going to happen because you are to blame. Oh, now, it took a while. I had to start with just little fears and little anxiousnesses, and I had to learn how to see the judger inside of me, the cruelty, the self-cruelty. But slowly and surely, I came to the place that I could treat even that guest honorably. I could welcome it in. And, oh, my God, the first time that happened, just my heart just filled up and spilled over with such love for this part of me that lived in agony for so long, that lived in dread. No wonder I tried to kill myself so many times. And I opened into an indescribable joy. And that is when I really, truly began to see the power of welcoming, the power of allowing what is to be there without falling into it or running away from it. So I want to end with a very, very well-known Buddhist teaching story, which comes from Tibetan Buddhists. And it's a story about Milarepa. And I want to tell this story because it really is saying the same thing. And I think we need to hear this over and over again. This is like learning a new language. You know, we have known the language of struggle. We have known the language of our dualistic mind that is always trying to get here and not here and likes this and doesn't like that. And so we're learning this new language of the aware heart. Our mind is exclusive. It likes this, it doesn't like that, but our heart is inclusive. And as I said before in other shows, that science has now shown our heart is our main brain. And so I want to end with Milarepa's story because, again, it's another tradition that is saying, that is sharing the message that we are exploring here today. So Milarepa lived in a cave, and one day he returned to his cave after gathering wood. He found his cave had been taken over by demons. The demons represented everything that we don't like about ourselves and life and thus resist. His first thought was, oh my God, I got to get rid of these demons. And he tries forcefully to get them out of his cave, but the demons are completely unfazed to his attempts. In fact, the more he chases them around, the more comfortable and at home they seem to be. At this point, Milarepa recognizes that maybe he has something to learn from them, and maybe his approach can be different. So he goes to each demon and says to them, I am ready to hear what you have to teach me. In other words, he sat them down for a cup of tea and listened to them. And one by one, they disappeared, except for one, which happens to be the biggest demon with flaring nostrils and dripping fangs. So Milarepa becomes a guest house, a true guest house for this demon, welcoming it, offering it tea, and he even says, eat me if you wish. I think he says that line because it really speaks to the essence of not resisting what we have formerly deemed unacceptable and unwantable. And then he places his head in the demon's mouth, and the demon bows and dissolves into space. Thank you, Milarepa. So yes, we have all been deeply conditioned to reject the unwanted in an effort to get us out of struggle, but it turns out that all the ways we try to fix or change our experience actually keep us caught in struggle. Rumi is inviting us. Eckhart is inviting us. Milarepa is inviting us. Whoever wrote that, invite them in for tea, is inviting us to stay open, to be the open space where all the thoughts and feelings that we experience can move through us. They are all inspiring us to live with an openness to whatever is showing up in our lives and to meet it with clarity and kindness so we can again and recognize and live from the ocean of being that we truly are. So know that the most important thing is you've heard this invitation. You may do nothing with it for a while. You are an organic process. And by listening, a whole bunch of really wonderful seeds have been planted inside of you. Don't struggle with these seeds. Know that, you know, the rose doesn't struggle with, oh my God, I've just got to really work hard to put out more leaves and a bud so I can become a bloom. No. The rose allows itself to be grown, allows itself to be bloomed. And in the right time and in the right way and in ways you can't even imagine right now, life is blooming you and bringing you back home to your own true nature. I thank you. I thank you for this willingness to listen, and I thank you for becoming a part of the healing of our planet. Namaste.
Thank you for listening to this edition of What's in Your Way is the Way with your host, Mary O'Malley. You can access Mary's offerings on her websites, maryomalley.com and whatsintheway.com. Join Mary next time to experience the peace and joy that is always with you on Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age. Heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.